Chapter 8. The Fall of Spaten House. For Our Lives. Sastre. Loyal Sastre. The halls of the house were quiet, with the lights dimmed, but I could smell burning. I hurried down a carpeted crosswalk, arming the needle pistol. 30 rounds in a fully charged cell. I had no reload. Tiny red lights were winking on the security monitor dials, recessed into the walls at regular intervals. I went to the nearest one, opened the cover, and was about to press my signet ring into the reader when I heard movement. I raised the gun. Two maids and a houseman ran into view and yelped when they saw me. "Steady, steady," I cried out, lowering the gun. "This way, come on." They ran up to me and cowered behind some ornamental plant stands. "What's going on?" They were too scared to answer at first. I saw that the youngest of them was the new girl, Litu. She looked up at me with terrified, tear-pink eyes. "Litu, what's going on?"
"Raiders," she said, her voice breathy with panic. "Raiders, sir. Just minutes ago, there was suddenly this great big bang from upstairs, and then shooting. Men running around with guns. I saw a man dead. I think it was Urban, I think."
Rosef Urban, one of my security detail.
"He had all blood coming out of his face," she stammered.
"The raiders, Litu. From which direction?"
"From the west, sir," said the houseman, Collion. "From the main gate, I think. I heard Master Kersher say they were coming from the stable block, too."
"You saw Kersher?"
"He was a bit mad, sir. I heard him as he ran past."
I looked around. The smell of burning was getting stronger, and I could hear more shots.
"Collion," I said, "do you have your house keys?"
"I'm never without them, sir," he said.
"Good man. Go along here to the east porch, and then get yourself and these women into the gardens. Head for the orchards. Hide. Got a comm?"
"Yes, sir."
"If you don't hear from me in the next 20 minutes, try and get all three of you off the property. Look after them, Collion."
"I will, sir."
They ran off. I fitted my ring into the monitor and authorized access. The little wall unit lit the air with a small diagnostic hologram. Incredibly, it stated that all security systems, all detectors, all perimeter shields were shut down. They'd been shut down at source, using an authorized command code.
How in the name of hell?
"Jubal," I tried the vox again.
"Anybody! This is Eisenhorn. Respond!"
The hand vox answered this time. A man's voice, hard like stone.
"Eisenhorn, you are dead, Eisenhorn."
I went down through the staff quarters. It seemed like everyone had fled. Doors were open and a few chairs were overturned. Half-drunk cups of caffeine still steaming. A half-finished game of regicide in the butler's pantry. A picked unit still playing a live broadcast from the arena at Dorset. A fallen low stick burning a patch in the carpet. I stamped out the embers. Through a door into the west landing, I found Urban. He was dead, all right. He was sprawled with his back arched in the doorway. Laser fire had blasted him open. I was bent over him when I heard footsteps. Three men came in through the other side of the landing, but I only saw two of them. They were moving fast, with the fluid confidence of trained killers. They were wearing combat armor made of rubberized mesh, their faces hidden behind grotesque papier-mâché masks, the kind you can buy in Dorset's market for the carnivals. They had cut down las rifles. They fired as soon as they saw me, their shots striking the doorframe. I barely had time to dive into cover. I heard the pip and chatter of their micro-bead communicators. One, sporting a gilded carnadon mask, moved in, running low, as another in a mermaid mask gave cover. From the doorway, I fired the needle pistol twice and put two tiny holes through the carnadon leer. The raider folded up and crashed to the floor, his knees buckling under him. The mermaid fired again, repeatedly, and I switched to the other side of the doorway.
"Cease,"
I commanded, using my will. No reaction. They were psi-shielded. Someone had prepared. I crouched and fired up at the chandelier. When it came crashing down, the mermaid dived to the side, and I caught him squarely with three needles, any of which would have been a kill shot. The mermaid thumped backwards heavily and brought a console table over as he fell. I moved through the door, not realizing the third one was there. His shots grazed my shoulder and knocked me down hard. There was a very loud bang. I looked up.
"Gregor?"
It was Amos.
"Gregor, I think I've jammed your bloody gun," he said.
I got up. Amos was standing in a nearby doorway, fiddling with my bolt pistol. The third, unseen raider, had made a clotted dent in the plasterwork.
"Give it to me," I said.
snatching the bolt pistol and freeing the slide. "Thank you, Amos," I added. He shrugged.
"It's most perturbatory," he said. "Guns and me, we don't seem to get on. And I always..."
"Amos, hush! What the hell's going on?"
"We're under attack," he said.
"I need a little more than that, old friend."
"Well, I know little more, Gregor. Boom, we're under attack. No warning, no nothing. Men everywhere. Lots of running around and shooting. We thought you were dead."
"Me?"
"They hit the study first. A grenade or something."
"Damn. Come with me. Stay close." We went upstairs. Skeins of smoke drifted through the air. I had the needle pistol in one hand and the bolt gun in the other. At the top of the stairs, we found two members of my house staff. They had been shot against a wall.
"Oh, that's terrible,"
Amos murmured. It was. Someone would pay dearly for this outrage. The door to my study was open, and the smoke was issuing from inside.
"Stay back,"
I whispered to Amos, and lunged in through the door. The room was a mess. A missile or ram grenade fired from the lawns had blown out the main windows and turned the desk and chair into kindling. Cold night air breezed in through the shattered casement and wafted the smoke from the burning rug and shelving into the house. There were three more raiders inside, ransacking the bookshelves and trying to force open the file store. A man with a clown mask was raking precious manuscripts, slates, and scrolls out of a climate-controlled case into a sack. Another, in a serpent mask, was repeatedly kicking the display case in which Barbarisata was stored, trying to rupture it. A third, sporting a grinning sun, was attacking the armored sleeve of my file bureau with a crowbar. They all turned, reaching for their weapons.
Thrown they were fast.
I had the drop, but they moved like lightning. The serpent actually managed to loose a burst at me that went over my diving head before I felled him with a bolt round. His body hit the armor glass cover of the sword case and left a streak of gore down it as it slid off. The clown was slower, and his torso was punctured by needle rounds before he dropped the sack. He just fell over, his mask crumpling as it struck first one shelf edge, then another, on its way down to the floor. The sun face threw the crowbar aside and dived behind the ruins of the desk even as I was rolling out of the end of the dive and re-aiming. His blurt of lasfire met my hail of bolts and needles. I swear that at least two of my bolt rounds were exploded in mid-air by his laser shots. But the needles went clean through the desk and clean through him. He lolled back, dead. I got up and walked towards the destroyed end of my study. That's where I found Sulis. I'd sent him here just a few hours before. The burning pages of Boydenstyre's Lives were littered around. He'd been sitting at my desk when the missile had taken out the window bay.
"Dear Emperor Aldemar."
Amos was bitterly shocked at the ghastly sight. I was simply furious by then. I pushed the needle gun, now virtually spent, into my pocket and grabbed more bolt clips from the shelf by the window. "We have to get out of here, Amos," I said. He nodded dumbly. I picked up the sack that the clown had been filling and handed it to Amos. "Fill it," I said. "You know what's valuable." He hurried to obey. I typed security codes into the cases containing Barbarisata and the rune staff. The armor glass covers purred open. Outside, there was a shrill whining noise, and the beams of searchlights crossed the lawns and the orchards. My attackers had air cover. One final necessity. I opened my encoded void safe and took out the ancient, wretched copy of the Malus Codicium. I tucked it into my coat, but Amos had seen it. "Come on," I said.
"One moment,"
Amos replied, tugging a last few scroll cases into the sack and then hoisting it onto his back.
"Now I'm ready," he said.
I went to the door, bolt gun in one hand and Barbarisata in the other. The staff was slung across my back. I could hear a fierce bout of shooting from below, a serious firefight. My loyal friend Jubal Kersher wasn't going without a fight. "Follow me," I told Amos. It had only been a few minutes since the comm alarm that had disrupted the auto seance. Already that tranquil encounter with the shade of Midas Betancourt seemed like ancient history. The house was on fire. From the east wing, flames leapt up into the cool night and filled the air with fluttering ashes and cinders. We cowered behind a wall in the yard outside the kitchen and got a look out across the back lawn. Three heavy speeders had landed there, crouching like glossy black insects on their extending landing claws. Their side hatches were open and cabins empty. A fourth and then a fifth passed low overhead, searchlights sweeping down as they riddled the back of the house with cannon fire. Five flyers. Each one was capable of carrying a dozen armed men. That meant a small army was assaulting Spaten House. Someone wanted me and my staff eradicated. Someone wanted my precious secrets and trinkets looted. And someone had enough money and influence to make those things happen. In truth, the house's auto-defenses should have easily held off the attack, even an attack of this magnitude. Inquisitors make enemies. A fortified residence is an occupational necessity. But Spaten House had been broken wide open. Its screens, void shutters, lockouts, motion detectors, sentry servitors, gun pods, everything had been inert when the attackers arrived. They were mercenaries, I was sure of that. Highly trained, highly motivated, utterly ruthless. But who had bankrolled them, and why? Answers later, I decided, as another series of explosions rippled across the estate and lit the sky. The stable block, which I used as a hangar and garage, had just gone up.
"What about one of their vehicles?"
Amos whispered, gesturing to the flyers on the lawn. It was too risky. We'd be out in the open and the speeders were likely to be guarded. I shook my head.
"The water dock, then," he suggested. "Maybe they haven't got to the boats?"
No, they had everything else covered. They knew the layout, knew to hit the stables. They were briefed about this place inside and out. We went back inside, through the kitchen and across the little walled herb garden, into the scullery behind the dining hall. Smoke fumes strung the air like silk hangings. I had one last means of escape, one I believed they didn't, couldn't know about. Barbariseta twitched, and I knew someone was coming. I pushed Amos back behind me. Two figures came into view. One was Alina Coy, the untouchable assigned to the house. She was supporting Zell Sastry, one of Kirsch's men. He had been wounded in the arm and shoulder.
"Alina!"
I hissed.
"Lord, thank the Emperor. We thought you were dead."
Her narrow face was taut with panic, and Sastry's blood was all over her brushed Epinchir gown. I took a quick look at Sastry's wounds. They were bad, but he'd live if we could get him to an infirmary. "Have you seen any others? Kirscher? Have you seen him?"
"I saw him die," said Sastry. "They were driving us back, and he stayed to hold the main hall. Took on 20 of the bastards."
"You're sure he's...
They blew him apart. But not before he'd finished a good half dozen. He told me... Kronsky let them in."
"What?"
"Kronsky. The new guy hired last month. He betrayed the whole house. Shut down the defense system."
An inside job, as I had feared. Kirscher had employed this Kronsky in good faith, and no doubt scrupulously vetted his background and subjected him to a mind search. And I had welcomed Kronsky to my house. My respect for the resources, skill, and preparation of my unknown enemy grew. A speeder howled by close outside, and the sound of its sporadic fire shook the windows in their frames. "Can you keep up?" I asked Sastre and Alina. They nodded.
"Where are we going?"
asked Alina. "Out through the dining hall, then quickly across the lawn of the rose garden into the orchard behind the maze. After that, we swing south, make our way to the front fence, and then over the main road into the woods." I was describing a journey of over 2 kilometres, but no one balked. Staying put was suicide. I wanted to try my vox again and try to raise Medea, but knew it was pointless. The raiders had all channels covered. Instead, I reached out with my mind.
"Medea. Medea."
To my amazement, I was answered almost at once. It was Vance.
"We're just outside the Pugnasium. Medea's going to try and take one of their flyers."
"No, stop her, Jekud. They're too well guarded. Tell Medea the Storm Oak. She'll know what it means. If we get there first, I'll wait as long as I can." The dining hall was in darkness, and the buffed wood floor was littered with glass. The windows had been blown in, and the drapes rustled in the night breeze. We made our way across to the windows. Outside, the rose garden was quiet and gloomy. The light of the fires cast long shadows across the immaculate lawn. We ducked back inside as a flyer flew over. It paused above the lawn, engines wailing, its downjets rippling the surface of the lawn. It was so close, I could hear the crackle and sputter of the cockpit intervox. The search lamp swung towards us, suddenly blinding, jabbing beams of frosty white light into the dining hall. The glass litter glittered like a constellation. Then the speeder moved off again, thundering around towards the back of the house.
"Go!"
I hissed. We ran across the lawn, Amos was surprisingly spry, but Alina struggled with Sastry. I dropped back and helped her with him. He kept apologizing, telling us to leave him. He was a good man. We reached the edge of the orchard and lost ourselves in the shadows of the arbors, following the back of the maize. The air was richly scented with the maize's pungent privet and the sweet, acid smell of the ripening fruit. Moths and nocturnal insects fluttered in the half-light. Well into the orchard, 70 meters from the house, we stopped for breath. Weapons fire and shouting still echoed from the residence. I looked around, trying not to look at the brilliant blaze of the buildings, so I could adjust to the gloom under the trees. They were low, graceful apple, tumin, and ploin, planted in orderly rows. The white bark of the tumin trees shone like snow in the dimness, and some of the early ploin clusters had been carefully bagged against scavenging birds. Scant days before, I had been out here with the junior staff, joking as we gathered up the first tumin crop. Altveld had been with us, taping the bags around the dark, swelling ploins. That night, Yarat had served a glorious tumin tart as dessert. Yarat, I wondered what had become of her in all this. I never did find out. Sastre stiffened and brought up his las pistol at a movement nearby, but it was just a garden servitor, moving along the aisle of fruit trees, spraying pesticide. Oblivious to the carnage nearby, it was simply obeying its nightly programming. We started forward again, but when I looked back, I saw several figures coming out of the dining hall windows and spreading out across the rose garden. I bade the other three move ahead and crept back, staying as concealed as possible, in case they had night vision lenses or motion detectors. I came upon the slow-moving servitor from behind, opened a back panel as it trudged monotonously forward, and keyed in new instructions. It moved off towards the rose garden, adjusting its route only to avoid trees. I had increased its pace. I was already on my way back to rejoin the others when I heard the first few shots. The raiders, surprised by the sudden appearance of the servitor. With any luck, it would delay or distract them. If they had been following our movement, then maybe the servitor would convince them that was all they had detected. We kept going until we were well clear of the maze and had left the orchard behind. We crossed dark, overgrown paddocks, fumbling blindly. The only light came from the haze in the sky behind us, where Spaten House blazed. We turned south, or a rough estimation of south. This was still my estate. Indeed, the land I held title for stretched for several kilometers in all directions, but this was uncultivated wood and scrubland. I could hear the sea, tantalizingly out of reach beyond the headland behind us. I wondered how far we could get before the raiders finished their quartering of the house and realized I had slipped through their fingers. We hurried on for another 20 minutes, passing through glades of scrawny beech and wiry fintel. The ground was lush with nettles. We reached a waterlogged irrigation ditch, and it took us several minutes to manhandle Sastre across. I could see the perimeter fence and the road beyond. On the far side of that, the rising mass of the wild woodland, the heritage forests that still covered 2/3 of Gudrun, untouched and unmolested since the first colonies were built there.
"We're almost there," I whispered. "Come on."
Tempting fate, as always, Eisenhorn. Tempting fate. Las bolts slashed the air over our heads. A few at first, then more, from at least 4 sources. They lowered their aim, and the bright orange shots ripped into the nettles, kicking up mists of sap and pulp. 2 young larches by the fence ditch were splintered. Dry gorse and fintel shuddered and burst into flames. A flare went up, bursting like a star, and damning us all with its invasive light. "The fence! Come on!" I cursed. Behind us, by the light of the flare, I could see dark figures wading through the nettles and emerging from the trees. Every few moments, one of the figures would halt and raise his weapon, spitting dazzling pulses at us. Further away, back at the bright pyre of Spaten House, I saw 2 white blobs of light rise and disengage themselves from the fire glow. Speeders, called in, heading this way, chasing their beams across the paddocks and woods. We were at the fence. I channeled my fury into Barbarisata and slashed open a hole 2 meters wide. "Get through!" I yelled. Amos went through the gap. Sastre stumbled and fell, losing his grip on Alina's arm. I pushed her through the gap too and went back for the wounded man. Sastre had trained his pistol at the advancing killers and was firing. He was sitting down, leaning his back against the fence. He made 2 kills, as I remember, cutting down figures struggling forward in the weeds and undergrowth 50 meters away.
"Go, sir," he said. "Not without you. Go, damn it. You won't get far unless someone slows them down."
A rain of lasfire fell around us, puncturing the fence and throwing up wet clods of earth. I was forced to turn and use Barbariseta to deflect several shots. The blade hummed as it twitched and soaked up the power.
Go!
Sastre repeated. I realized he had been hit again and was trying to hide it. He coughed blood. I can't leave you like this.
Of course you can't, he snapped. Give me a bloody weapon. This damn las cell is nearly spent.
I crouched beside him and handed him my bolt gun and my spare clips.
The Emperor will remember you, even if I don't live to, I told him. You damn well better had, sir, or I'm wasting my efforts.
There was no time for anything further, no time even to take his hand. As I clambered through the fence, I heard the first roaring blasts of the bolt gun. Elena and Amos were waiting for me on the far side of the road in the fringes of the wild woods. I gathered them up, and we ran into the darkness, stumbling over gnarled roots, clambering up loamy slopes, surrounded by the midnight blackness of the primordial forest. The bolt gun continued to fire for some time. Then it fell silent. May the God Emperor rest, Zell Sastry, and show him peace.